What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, still masking, socially distancing, waiting on the shot, all that good stuff, as always. And glad to be with us for another show. A big one today. We've got, of course, as always, Michael F. Florio and producer Steve. By the way, Florio, this is it for you for a little while. We're sending you off to the hinterlands for a few months. What are you going to do with your free time, by the way?
I don't know. Right now, it's like I'm going to do nothing because I do not have that shot yet, Marcus. So I'm going to keep playing it safe. But I'm hopeful that I could get it and go see some family, some friends back home that I haven't seen in well over a year. But really, besides that, probably exercise a little bit, play with the puppy. Same old stuff I've been doing.
That sounds good. And then joining us, glad to have her, our friend. You know her from so many things, from NFL Fantasy Live, from all of her other analytical work that she does. It's our pal, the one and only Cynthia Freeland. Cynthia, glad to have you on the show. How are things?
I'm good. I'm just happy to see you, happy to be around. You know, it's all good here.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, we have plenty to talk about, which, by the way, I guess this is a way for me to promote the fact that, Cynthia, you and I are going to be on network television in a couple of days on the NFL Fantasy Live Free Agency Fallout show. So that hits on Thursday. So we can, you know, that's a way to, you know, shamelessly self-promote stuff that we are doing. But we're going to talk some free agency in a little bit here on this podcast. But I wanted to get you on mostly because I wanted to talk to you about the Big Data Bowl. And we had sort of been promoting it on this show for the last couple of weeks. For those who don't know or who, you know, missed out the first time, it is basically a large data science competition where the league offers a bunch of tracking data to various data scientists. And they come up essentially with a new metric for us to use. Last year, I know what it was, rush yards over expectation was a thing that that we came up with. This year, though, Cynthia, it was defense that was on. This is the first time they've done defense, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
It is. We've only had three big data bowls, so we're learning how to make the data available more interesting for the different groups. We had, like, over 200 submissions from all across the globe. So we're kind of working with, like, okay, what's available data? What can we potentially, like, what are we trying to solve for, and how can we best set people up to succeed? And this is the first time we went to look at defense.
So you said, what, over 200 submissions. It was narrowed down to 8 finalists. I didn't get to see the live stream, but I did get to see, you know, kind of what came out of it and the presentations and the Q&A and stuff like that, which I thought was really kind of interesting for you, you know, having kind of, you know, been hosting it, which you did a great job hosting, by the way, hosting it, kind of, you know, being a data scientist yourself. What impressed you a lot about, you know, some of the entries you saw this year?
First of all, the fact that, you know, you have to remember that these people don't work in our industry. They don't have the domain knowledge that the rest of us already kind of think about, right? So the fact that they were able to take this tracking data that was, like, it can be messy. It can be confusing. And if you don't have a lot of ability to understand both, like, the sport and, like, you know, actually, we got a chance to talk to John Harbaugh, and he put it best. He was talking about the respect for, like, the football guys and the respect for the data people. I found that every single submission was thoughtful. It was, you know, they even reached out to, like, one group reached out to Wade Phillips to ask for some real advice. Some had mentors across the NFL from different teams. Like, they really did a nice job of being mindful of the intersection of, like, the strategy of football and what the data could tell you. Because remember, the next gen stats have only been around for, like, 5 years. So it's not like they're a perfect science to begin with. There's a lot of holes. There's a lot of imputing. And by the way, we can't give them all of the data. They only get a small subset to begin with. So the fact that they were able to come up with some really great insights with kind of, like, all these limitations was so inspiring and so cool.
You know, so you mentioned, like, a lot of these people don't necessarily work in football. I know there are a lot of people who said their favorite sport was maybe something else, was hockey or whatever. Do you think there's maybe an advantage to not necessarily being locked into football and thinking in a football way? I feel like sometimes maybe coming at it with less of a football perspective maybe gives you the freedom to think a little more creatively. I don't know. Am I weird like that?
No. I was actually – so there's two ways that the competition is divided up. There are people who are currently in college. So imagine, like, these are like, they have no idea. They've never had like a full-time job before. Right. And then there are people who are open competition. And many of those people are actually data scientists with like a data science title. And I actually thought that the college participants and the college entries were so creative. And so, you know, I look at it, and this is kind of like a secret of the Big Data Bowl. We're trying to get people hired. We're trying to create a good pipeline for jobs in the league, jobs for, I mean, you see there's a bunch of women, there's a bunch of like people, I didn't play football, and there's people who look like me in it, right? So, you know, it's the creativity around, you know, the thoughtfulness to ask the questions, the thought, like the fact that like they don't come from the fact of being like, I know it all. Like, I just know, like I've watched Julio Jones for 15 years and he's never going to get in the end zone. Like, you know, you don't have as many of those biases that really kind of can limit us sometimes. So it was really, I think you're right. Like, there is definitely something about not already thinking you know the answer.
All right. So the winning submission this year, it's called A Framework for Assessing Individual Defensive Performance in Coverage. A group of four guys who put this thing together. Now, obviously, for our selfish, greedy fantasy purposes, we always tend to look at things through an offensive lens. We're always more worried about offensive metrics and that sort of thing. But I'm trying to figure out, I feel like there's a way that we can sort of use this to our own selfish purposes. I mean, when you look at it, do you find anything that works for fantasy when you're looking at something like this?
Totally. So first off, one of the guys in the group, my favorite kind of story was like, he got tricked into becoming a football fan because he like his friends brought him to a Super Bowl party and like he had no interest in it before, but then all of a sudden he was like, okay, I guess this is kind of fun. And we had one of the judges was from the Browns. He was actually a past winner. And this guy was like, so then I became a huge Steelers fan. And we're like, it was pretty funny. So, but what they did that was really cool was they actually thought about not just, you know, nearest defenders, but schemes. So they had a bit of man and a bit of zone that was peppered. And that's, it's very hard. It's hard to know if it's man or zone. It's very hard to know that, right? For all of us, it's hard to know that. So one of the ways that you could use this is to really think about, like, if you want to stream, it's probably not for your wideout one or your draft decisions, but you're streaming a wide receiver or you're choosing between who to play on your bench and who you should potentially roster this week. A metric like what they came up with would allow you to say, okay, it's basically think about like the potential for there to be separation. So a better potential for there to be separation and a receiver who's known for separation. Well, yes, I'm flexing you in as opposed to, you know, putting you on my bench this week, even though maybe on paper it's a scary team like the Patriots, but maybe their man doesn't work against the types of routes that this receiver runs. So the fact that they had that thoughtfulness towards scheme and matchup was really helpful.
Yeah, I feel like just any way we can get smarter doing this, I think we're all going to be better off potentially, which kind of begs the last question I got about this is, how much deeper do you think we can sort of go with this data science and these metrics that folks are working on right now?
I mean, the fact, like the interesting part, the fact that like, so this year in particular, I've spent a lot more time personally, and I'm a media data scientist, right? I do work for teams in my spare time, but this off season, nobody has good ways to measure things that we typically have some like benchmarks for. We all kind of know that like the 40 is kind of, it's more showmanship, but there is some merit into falling between like an acceptable range, right? Of running it if you're looking for wide receivers, for example, or corners. And when we don't have, in the absence of like this, we've always done it this way and blah, blah, blah. In the absence of that, people are getting really creative with searching for solutions. And the really good teams, like there are some really smart teams who are saying, well, now it's time that we can throw out some of these paradigms and we can start looking at things in terms of like, what do we already have and what are the holes in our data? Because, you know, it's not really about getting to perfect. It's getting like a little bit better each time, right? So you can see it from draft stuff, but that will infiltrate into in-season stuff, right? Being able to pre-snap motion. Let's talk about Curtis Samuel and pre-snap motion, right? That's going to make it totally different for Ryan Fitzpatrick and thus Terry McLaurin than it has in the past. And that's stuff that we can now measure. So it's really more about piecing together like what the blessing for COVID, and we got to find all the positives we can. And in this weird season with a lot of shortcuts and whatever, one of the things is to say, okay, like let's be creative about the assets that we do have. And the data is one of those assets, and people are becoming, even old school coaches are becoming even more kind of accepting of being like, all right, let's like come up with a framework to do a little better.
I think that speaks a lot to when old school, quote unquote, football guy is starting to buy into it. Then I think you really know that it's making inroads as a thing. So if you missed it, if you didn't get a chance to check it out, if you are a stats nerd, if you aren't, though, and you just kind of want to see something different and get a little bit smarter, go check it out. NFL.com/Big Data Bowl. It's an hour long presentation. You can even watch any of the individual presentations. There's a whole lot of information there. I definitely recommend it. It's totally worth checking out.
I have to give Hytham Hytham crushed producing that. Let's be honest. Like, I don't know if prior to this, Hytham would be like, you know what? I really want to like produce like the heck out of this like nerdy, like math, like analytics con. I don't know if I want to be in charge of analytics con, but he like crushed it, hit it out of the park. Like, the reason that it's actually enjoyable to watch is because Hytham just totally crushed it. So I have to, you know, give credit where credit's due there.
That's our bud Hytham Kalani, who has done great work here for a long time. My pal, my friend, really smart guy who basically tries to downplay it. I asked him what's interesting, what I should keep an eye out for. And he's like, bro, I went to art school. I don't know. This is all over my head. But he did. He did a great job of it.
He crushed it. Crushed it.
All right. So let's talk some free agents here as we continue with the free agent frenzy, I guess. The frenzy has sort of died down a little bit. As we speak right now, and obviously this could change, some of the best free agents still out there, running backs, you got Duke Johnson, James Conner, James White, wide receivers, T.Y. Hilton, Sammy Watkins, Antonio Brown, all still out on the free agent market. But let's hit some of the big news that's happened since we last talked to you on this podcast. Maybe the biggest is that Kenny Golladay has landed in New York. He signs a deal with the Giants. We were sort of waiting to see what happened, right? He was sort of the big domino that was going to fall in this whole thing. So now we know where he goes. He works with Daniel Jones and that crew up there. Florio, let me bring you in here. Please tell me why I should be excited about this, because I'm just sort of meh. Tell me why what am I missing? Why I should be excited about Kenny Golladay in New York?
Well, first, I'm sorry, Cynthia. I know you are a Lions fan, and him going to New York isn't great for Detroit, but I think he's a lot better of a real-life fit for the Giants than I think this is for his fantasy value. Like, he is not a huge separation creator, so, like, he relies on, going up high and catching the ball at the catch point, and he has a huge catch radius, and he's going to be a good weapon for Daniel Jones, who already throws into tight windows at a pretty high clip, actually even higher than Matt Stafford has been in the last couple of years. So I think anytime you can get a receiver of his caliber with all the stuff that he can do for an offense and for a young quarterback, I think it helps a lot. But for fantasy, I think this is a clear downgrading quarterback from Stafford to Daniel Jones, and I just don't love the Giants offense as a whole. And I can get Kenny Golladay being still a useful piece that you want to take as your wide receiver two, but he was going off the board as a wide receiver one last year with really high expectations. So I think you could get excited for this as a Giants fan or as, you know, a Daniel Jones supporter. But for if you're just a Kenny Golladay fantasy fan, there's not a whole lot to get excited for, in my opinion.
I mean, all right, Cynthia, I mean, does this do anything for you when it comes to Daniel Jones? Does it get you more excited about him this year?
No, I think it's the interesting thing here is how much they paid for him, which means they have huge expectations. And I also, given how much money Gettleman spent in general, I think his strategy is like, I'm going to pay now because then next year when the salary cap goes up, I've already gotten him for 18. And I don't know. I think it's like an interesting logic that he's taken. Maybe not helpful, but I would like him to be writing my paycheck. But ultimately, I don't think for fantasy purposes, like, I'm also very weary if Golladay can stay healthy. In this offseason where we have less ability to vet any of that stuff, it just seems super risky. Like, unless you're getting a good value for him, like, he's a wide receiver too that I think has way more downside than up. It's not a great offense for, you know, it's going to be Jason Garrett's offense. That's what it is. We already know. And I don't know if the O-line got better. Sure, you get Saquon back, so that'll help a little bit. But Daniel Jones can throw into tight coverage, but that doesn't mean it's a good throw. So I don't know if I necessarily – I don't know. This is like – to me, he's like wide receiver three probably. And I'd be like, draft.
I feel like as this process sort of went on and we were waiting for Golladay to sign, I got the feeling that us fantasy folks – love him way more than maybe real NFL people. And like, and that's not to say that they think he's bad. I mean, I think everybody understands that he is a quality football player, but I do think there's much more excitement and much more love for him on the fantasy side of the game than on the real side of the game. And I think that sort of bore itself out with the way negotiations went, with the deal he ultimately got in New York. Now, for me, I look at the rest of that receiving core. I look at Darius Slayton. I look at Sterling Shepard. And it's hard for me to get really excited about any of them there, because I think they're all sort of kind of mid-level players, right? And they're all going to sort of, you know, cannibalize each other, take food off each other's plates. And I'm just sort of underwhelmed by the whole thing. I guess I could throw Evan Engram in that group too, right? Because I know he has tight end next to his name, but he sort of has wide receiver tendencies. I look at that and I just sort of get just kind of meh about it. So, I mean, I'll ask you, Florian, which one of those guys do you take first? Is it still Galladay, or do you decide maybe even just to wait and try to get a value with one of the other two?
It would be Galladay if I was to take any of them first, but I don't anticipate on – I'm much like Cynthia. Like, I do not really anticipate drafting a lot of Kenny Galladay this year, because I'm just – I think it's a downgrade for him, and I'm not nearly as excited as I was in years past. Of those other receivers, I would say Sterling Shepard I think is the best, because I think the move from Golden Tate to Kenny Galladay is a natural improvement for Sterling Shepard, because he is so much better – in the slot than he is out wide. And last year they asked him to play more out wide than ever because Golden Tate was occupying the slot, but he is now gone. Slayton and Galladay become your clear outside threats and downfield threats. So that could potentially open stuff up across the middle for Sterling Shepard. But when they signed Galladay, I put this on Twitter. I said, all right, Saquon Barkley is probably going to, he's an early first round pick. Kenny Galladay is going to get drafted. Which other Giants player can you get excited to draft in fantasy? Because I don't think there's really any.
No, I would agree. And then as our resident Lions fan, Cynthia, I just have to ask you, does this mean TJ Hawkinson is just – is he through the roof now? Does he get all of the targets in Detroit now?
Yeah, I mean, if there are going to be targets, I feel like Jared Goff might just be flat the entire time. It's I don't know. I don't know if I'm a Lions fan anymore. I'm really questioning this. I think I might be joining Bills Mafia. Not kidding. They're just the best fans on the planet. So, I mean, look, TJ Hawkinson is a special tight end, but – I've seen almost nothing from them that I think is impressive, like whatsoever. So it's going to be a real, you know, kneecap biting scenario.
As a Bills Mafia supporter, Cynthia, we will welcome you in with open arms.
I'm telling you, like, you guys are fun. Like, you guys are hilarious. Like, a lot. I mean, you guys are a lot, but you're fun.
And they've been fun win or lose. I mean, even when it wasn't great, they're still having fun out there.
Yeah. Are you willing to jump through a table?
Why not? Yes, of course. That seems like a low price of entry to me. Like, of course, you're good.
I mean, all the emotional pain you've suffered as a Lions fan, what's jumping through a plastic table at this point?
Seriously, it seems like fun to me. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. What is not quite so fun right now for me, the Houston Texans backfield, they signed Philip Lindsay. This is not long after they signed Mark Ingram. They already have David Johnson there. I mean, I guess they've cleared up some space because Duke Johnson's no longer there. But, I mean, all right, Cynthia, who would you rather between David Johnson, Philip Lindsay, Mark Ingram? You know, if you had to pick one, who would it be?
I'd pick Philip Lindsay, but – this year, my drafting strategy is going to be like anyone who's on a team that's run by people with narcissistic personality disorder, I think I'm going to try to stay away from. So I'm really not going to be taking any of the Texans.
I'm totally right.
Yeah, like no more narcissists. Like I've learned a lot about that during COVID. So I'm just like done with all of it. So I feel bad for any of them on that team. Like I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens from here, but I think they're making some really interesting decisions when it comes to their backfield. But are they going to run the wildcat? Like what are we doing here? Like I mean I know Tyrod Taylor's there, but okay, we'll see. No narcissists in my lineups.
No narcissists. 2021. That's the motto right now.
It's like a team name.
My fear is that they're going to somehow try to use all three of these guys.
Oh, they
right?
are for sure.
They're invested in David Johnson. They've made an investment in Mark Ingram. They add Philip Lindsay. I just can't imagine that they're, you know, these aren't just camp bodies, right? You don't sign these guys this early in the process and have them come in to be camp bodies, right? You are expecting them to make an impact. A three-headed scenario is honestly the worst thing that we could possibly imagine here. The other part of it, though, Florio, is what happens with Deshaun Watson, right? Now, obviously, there's the, you know, the whole issue of whether or not he wants to be traded and if he wants out. Now, you know, we've got away from the field a number of these allegations and these civil lawsuits that have been brought to him for improper conduct and just, you know, illicit behavior, all these accusations that have popped up. So there are a lot of clouds around Deshaun Watson. If he's not there, how much more awful does this all look?
This offense, I think, could be the worst in football if Deshaun Watson is not there next year, because you're going with Taylor, and if anything happens to Taylor, then you have Ryan Finley backing him up. I mean, we've seen how bad offenses can get when Ryan Finley has to be asked to come in and lead them. Plus, in the receiving game, then you have Brandon Cooks and not a whole lot else, so he's probably going to get double teamed a whole bunch. And then in the running game, like, that could be the one spot in this offense that maybe you could trust if they had one running back, but they have three. So it just makes it such a headache. I could see Mark Ingram getting cast aside pretty early like he did last year, but I think out of the gate they are going to try to get all three of these guys used right away, which means none of them are really that useful for fantasy, because maybe David Johnson leads them, but I don't feel confident picking anyone that could lead them in touches in any week.
Whoever's going to catch some passes, because their strategy is awful. Like, who's going to – their defense has no one to stop anything, so teams are just going to run on them. So then they're going to throw, presumably. I don't know. I think you take the defense playing them every week. Just stream whoever's playing the Texans.
I mean, they sound like a team that could use a lot of draft picks if only they had someone.
They had a few somewhere along the way. You know, I would imagine. I mean, they traded DeAndre Hopkins, right? They had to have loaded up with some first round picks for that, right? Right. Mm-hmm.
You would think.
Ooh. I mean, so if there's, I mean, with Brandon Cooks, if Deshaun Watson is there, Brandon Cooks is a nice piece. I mean, if there's no Deshaun Watson, I mean, Cynthia, is there anybody from this team you would think about drafting?
I don't want anyone from the Texans, even if it's like the, you know, when that thing, you know, every once in a while when you're drafting, like there's that one player that's like stuck on the top and you're like, dang it, it's round seven and they're still, dang it, maybe I should just take that. Nope. Even if that, it's like, oh, does it say Texans? If it's not Deshaun Watson, fade.
I'm imagining just a log jam of Texans at the top of my queue during draft season that nobody wants.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like the Cheez-Its in the break room, the bags of Cheez-Its that just sit there and nobody ever touches. That's what it's going to be. Maybe a slightly better situation is in Seattle. Chris Carson is back. He re-signs there. When it looked, at least for an hour or two, like maybe he was going to go to Miami and sign with the Dolphins, but he hasn't. Flora, you're the one who I think brought this to my attention, that people have talked about him as being sort of a fringe RB1 with an RB2 draft value. I went and looked yesterday on Fantasy Football Calculator, and his draft value was like very end of the third round, almost the fourth round, which maybe that was, you know, maybe the, you know, the re-signing in Seattle hadn't quite caught up yet. But please explain to me why Chris Carson feels so undervalued all the time.
Because he is. Like, that is the simple answer. I jumped in a best ball draft this weekend just because I wanted to get a feel of like where these new players on new teams were going to go. And he went in the fifth round. And if he goes in the fifth round come August, like, I'm going to draft him there every single time. Because the thing about Carson is, yes, he's probably not going to give you 16 games. He never has in his career. But when he's on the field and he's played 14 games before, like 12 games, he gives you RB1 numbers most times because he's going to get most of their ground opportunities. Carlos Hyde is gone now too, and he was eating into them a little bit last year. If we're not trusting Chris Carson to stay healthy, there is 0% chance I could trust Rashad Penny to stay healthy. And the other thing about Carson was, in years past, they weren't really throwing him the ball. That changed last year, and Russell Wilson started to throw him the ball more, and not just, you know, these like little short screens. Like, there was some plays where he was getting like 10 plus air yards on the throws to Chris Carson. So to me, I think Carson can easily return RB1 value as long as he stays healthy. And you are never going to be asked to pay that price because I'm guessing injury concerns, but I don't really know why everyone is so low on Chris Carson.
I mean, nothing's changed, Cynthia, right? Like, ostensibly everything's the same. All the pieces are in place. Like, I don't understand it.
I think it's possible that Russell Wilson runs less this season and they stop asking him to do so much, which would theoretically mean a healthy Chris Carson would even get more opportunities. Because I think part of what happens with Seattle, and we see it every year, is like there's some distraction of some sort, right? Is it a defensive end that doesn't want to come back? Is it now Russell Wilson maybe going to the Bears that comes up, or all these weird things? And then we kind of like don't think about this offense. Like, you're just like, oh, Russell or nothing, right? And then you kind of don't know where to put the TJ, you know, the Lockett and the, you know, you like, and you're like, okay, well, what do we do? Like, you know, Tyler Lockett and whatever. But like, to me, I think you just look and say, it's probably going to be pretty close to the same, if not a little bit more running opportunities for other people. Keep him upright.
I mean, I do think that we're going to see Carson's draft value kind of go up. I think we'll see him kind of bounce back to the third round again, because he's back in a situation we're familiar with. Nothing has really changed. But I do wonder, Florio, what does this do for Russell Williams' value, Russell Wilson's value, up, down, about the same? Does this have any impact at all?
For me, it's still about the same, although I think what Cynthia said is something that I am worried about. Like, if he is going to run less, and I think they have incentive to ask him to run less because he said he doesn't want to keep taking all these hits, that is going to hurt his fantasy value, because we talk about it all the time, how much value these quarterbacks who can run really bring. So for me, last year I had him in like that second tier with like Dak and Watson, and Josh Allen's in that tier, Kyler Murray, and I will have him in that same grouping again this year, but he will be the last of them all, because I think for me, he comes with bigger question marks. Deshaun Watson comes with the biggest question mark of them all right now, but him aside, Wilson comes with more questions, because I worry about him running less and the team just running more, which would mean less passing opportunities as well.
I mean, by the end of the year, I kept saying it was hashtag let Russ hit the drive-through. They asked him to cook early in the year. It started off well. Then, you know, he broke a few eggs and burned the toast a couple times. And they were like, okay, maybe not cooking so much. And I feel like that's going to maybe continue into 2021. Another of the big wide receiver dominoes we were waiting to fall was Juju Smith-Schuster. There was talk that maybe he could end up in Kansas City. Instead, he stays in Pittsburgh with a one-year deal. When I saw it, I turned into the old character from SNL, the drunk girl you wish you hadn't started a conversation with at a party. I saw the sign and I was like, what? And like, why? Okay, I mean, help me out, Cynthia. How are you valuing Juju in drafts, considering last year he ended up in the top 20, but it was kind of a frustrating ride to get there, and it's sort of like Seattle. Nothing much has really changed offensively. I mean, do we draft him as a top 20 receiver, or do we count on him to, you know, can we count on him to repeat that this year?
Okay, so the math showed that he was running shorter routes. He was using that quick passing game. It was a function of kind of how they used Ben Roethlisberger differently. His air yards per target were like the lowest among qualified receivers. And he had been like, you know, 3 yards more on average in the two seasons prior. So you saw a difference in use. The second thing that is not so mathy, but I kind of think is interesting, is he's now incentivized to go, like, he needs to go make his money. I know he wanted a lot more money than what he got there. And so he's on a prove it 1 year deal and an opportunity to take advantage of a presumably heightened salary cap situation next season. So if you are the type of person who believes that incentives make someone better, or incentives get, like, do you want that bag, Juju? Because if you do, then you need to play this year. So I think because he's in a system that he's familiar with, I actually think he'll probably end up, I think he'll end up better off than last season. Now, do I think it's going to be like crazy top 10? No, I just think it's going to be like, I actually think he'll end up 15, 16, but it won't be so like up to get there, if that makes sense.
I mean, Florida, you were the one who, I think, who basically said they turned him into a tight end last year with the way they used him. I mean, will he be more of a wide receiver, or is he still going to be that? And I guess the corollary to that is, does this make you feel any better about Ben Roethlisberger and the elbow that seemed so problematic at the end of last year?
No, it doesn't, because they're just keeping – to me, at least, it looks like they're keeping their offense the same. And I know, like, I've seen people point to, like, oh, pitchers in other sports, their arms get stronger the second year outside of the surgery than the first. And I'm just like, well, Big Ben is a 40-year-old quarterback. He's not, like, you know, a 25-year-old starting pitcher. So to me, that comparison doesn't mean a whole lot. And last year, they clearly built this offense into Ben just getting rid of the ball as quickly as he possibly could. It was like 2.5 seconds, and the ball was out of his hands. They still have Claypool to be the deep threat there. So My fear is that Juju is going to play a very similar role to how he did last year, and that is just not good for fantasy. And I get it, like, why he would want to re-sign with the Steelers, but, man, he had a one-year opportunity to go play with Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs. He could have got paid next year if he signed there, in my opinion. So I get it. He wanted to stay in Pittsburgh. He says he wants to play there his whole career, but I would have been much more happy for fantasy if he had signed with the Chiefs instead of the Steelers.
The other part of that, you know, quarterback versus pitcher analogy is that, you know, if Clayton Kershaw were to have elbow problems, he also doesn't have to deal with Myles Garrett coming after him trying to hit next year either. It's a little bit of a different scenario when you're talking about that. I just worry about this offense in general, which sort of hurts because I love all three of their wide receivers. I like Juju. We saw what Chase Claypool could do at his peak last year, those big plays. You know, I think Deontay Johnson is the consensus number one receiver in that offense. He's got the skill, he's got the ability. But again, if Roethlisberger is struggling to throw the ball downfield, if he's struggling to you know, push the ball outside the numbers, then it ends up just being a difficult situation for all of us. I guess add to it the fact, too, that we're still trying to figure out what their running game is going to be. I know it wasn't necessarily great last year, but as I mentioned, James Conner is still out there as a free agent. I don't know that anybody is necessarily in love with Benny Snell. Anthony McFarland was kind of a nice complimentary piece. The days of the old Killer Bees in Pittsburgh are long gone. I mean, Antonio Brown's a free agent. Le'Veon Bell, for all intents and purposes, I mean, he's essentially done. This offense is just not what it was. I say that, and I know that at some point I'm going to be on the clock in, like, the fifth round, and Juju's going to be there, and I'm going to freak out, and I'm going to take him, and I'm going to be mad at him. I just know this is going to happen.
The USC connection.
Yeah, man. It's, you know, I always fall for the Trojans, man. I'm always a homer. But you know what? It doesn't matter now because we're a basketball school. Beat the snot out of Kansas on Monday night. The Trojans are officially a basketball school. That's all there is to it. Last signing of note, Josh Reynolds leaves the Los Angeles Rams. He goes to Tennessee, now joins the Titans. Cynthia, ostensibly he's taking the spot left open by Corey Davis, who left and went to the New York Jets. Can we expect a Corey Davis-like performance for him in Tennessee this year?
I would hope so, but I think, you know, no. I just don't think he has as much of the – I don't mean to, like, it's just an answer, right? So, you know, when you look at see what happens when he lined up in the spot that he's going to be asked to line up, is presumably wide, and I don't see him being as great of a route runner, at least not as precise. He's obviously good with play action because that's what they did a lot of. So the resume and the fit could be good, but I don't think it's going to be coming out of the gate quite as strong as what we kind of saw from Corey Davis. Although Corey Davis did underperform quite a bit for kind of where he was drafted versus what ended up happening with him. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's about managing expectations. So for Josh Reynolds, I think it will be good. I don't think it's going to be like this home run where you're like, oh dang, like, now Tennessee is a passing monster offense. We don't even need Derrick Henry. Like, no, not even close, right? So I think that's going to be – like, I think that's a really nice piece. Like, if I had to give it a grade out of 10, I would give it, like, a 7, like a solid 7.
So now back in Los Angeles, Florio, I mean, you know, this opens up obviously something for Van Jefferson, who we saw step up and make plays late in the year. So you've got Jefferson in there. You've got Matt Stafford, who we think is going to make this more of a vertical offense. Does this mean you're in late round draft pick for Van Jefferson this year?
Yeah, I like Van Jefferson a lot, but the Rams had to do what teams do, right? They have to just throw a wet blanket on players that fantasy players are excited for because they went out and they signed DeSean Jackson, who I know we could like make jokes about, oh, he's played literally has played 5 games the last 2 years, but when he's healthy, he is still one of the better field stretchers in the league, and that is now more competition for Van Jefferson than there was a couple days ago when he was still a free agent. So I like Van Jefferson. I think all three of those wide receivers, Reynolds, Jefferson, and DeSean Jackson, all are kind of similar in the sense that they could be like late round fantasy flyers that are field stretchers and have a big day occasionally, which to me it's kind of a cop-out answer, but these are all really nice best ball targets, I think, and not someone that you're going to want to have on your roster and try to figure out, like, is this the week he's going to catch the long ball?
Yeah, I was going to say, the cop-out answer is always like, he's great in best ball. But for me, DeSean Jackson is the original. He's great in best ball. Like, he's the original one, right? Like, whoever is, like, the biggest best ball variant for, you know, over the season should get the DeSean Jackson Award, right? Like, that's what it should be at this point. I'm not so worried about him. I feel like, you know, obviously he does have some value when he's healthy and on the field. This feels sort of like a homecoming, a chance for a guy to kind of end his career at home in Los Angeles. That's sort of how this feels to me, and I still think I would tend to throw the dart more at Van Jefferson than worry about DeSean Jackson at this point in his career. Before we wrap it up, I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to find some interesting things to sort of wrap up the show with. And I came up with sort of a couple of birthdays. One is to our pal Maurice Jones-Drew. Today it's his birthday. Happy birthday. You are one of the few Bruins that I will give props to on the occasion. Love the fact that what I love about MJD is he is maybe the biggest trash talker I've ever met in my life and will not back down. There's a reason I have a picture of him wearing a USC football jersey because, you know, we made it. When he first started, we made a wager. He made a wager with every Trojan alum he could see in the building that UCLA would beat USC that year in football. It didn't happen. So he wore a Trojan jersey that I brought him on TV for that Sunday.
Whose jersey was it?
It's number 9, which at the time was Juju Smith-Schuster. So I have a picture still in my phone somewhere.
You should have made it be Reggie Bush. It just would have been so poetic.
That would have been awesome. That would have been great. But yeah, no, I had a number 9, a Juju jersey. And so that's what he's wearing there. So happy birthday though to MJD. The other one is sort of happy birthday in a way to the Cleveland Browns. It was on this day in 1998. NFL owners unanimously approved an expansion team for Cleveland to replace the Browns that had moved to Baltimore and become the Ravens. So it was on this day in 1998 that Cleveland got their team back. Cynthia, what were you doing around this time in 1998, if you recall?
Well, I was in high school. I was probably like getting ready to learn how to drive, which was pretty cool. I was probably still like, you know, I was actually probably counting down the days so we could like, I was talking about this lately. I had a lot of fun tailgating at Michigan State games. Like, I'm from East Lansing, so like, you know, we like our the friends and family was to get the good food. Like, you know, I was probably already thinking about, oh, what can we do? Tailgate food for next fall. Big food person, you know.
So now I'm afraid to ask this question. Floria, what were you doing?
I wasn't born yet.
I was 7, so I was probably playing Pokemon or something. Okay. Like that seems like the prime era for me to probably have been playing Pokemon.
That's actually a better answer than I thought I was getting. I thought you were going to tell me that you were like a toddler or something and had no memory of it whatsoever. So that makes me feel at least a little bit better. I was probably about 6 or 8 weeks away from graduating from college at that point because I am an old. And I do remember that. I remember the Browns moving to Baltimore and becoming the Ravens. And then when Cleveland got their team back, not understanding that, you know, not thinking that the Browns fans would go through 2+ decades of misery when their team came back. I was gullible enough to believe that Tim Couch was going to be the answer for the new Browns and get them.
I just
going.
Had to wait a little bit for.
Had to wait. Hey, but you know what? It's worth it because you know what? Things are legitimately looking up in Cleveland.
They had an awesome free agent. They've like quietly added really nice pieces to their defense that you're like, oh, you could be really good. Like, and yeah. Odell comes back, so look
out. Sounds like the Browns are a sleeper team if Cynthia does not become a Bills fan.
I don't think I can do that. There's a lot of misery. I don't want to put myself in a situation like if I'm going to jump ship, it's just to be like the most fun fan base. Like,
yeah, I mean, look,
you know, I'm not like fair weather fanning it, you know, but just most fun.
They still, I mean, it's still the factory of sadness until things turn around. And so I don't know that you want to necessarily align yourself. Like, good on you, Browns fans who have stayed loyal, and you deserve all the happiness in the world. But I think it's going to be a while before you see a whole lot of bandwagon Browns fans. That's just my thought there.
I'm going for best tailgate, and Bills seem to have that one.
Bills seem to have a lot.
I would say that they. I went to a Jets Bills game in New York, and the Bills fans took over that tailgate. So
they
know what they're doing.
I totally believe it. Hey, Cynthia, we appreciate you jumping in. Hopefully we'll do this again soon.
Anytime.
You know, we have a long off season, so I hope to get you on again at some point before we're done.
Anytime. Would love to.
Absolutely. And Florio, we're going to miss you, bud, for the next few months. I definitely plan to sneak you in here a few times during your hiatus, too, because, you know, I'm just going to want your insight on stuff. And maybe just, if nothing else, we can talk Mets and Dodgers for
I am happy to do so. And I just wanted to quickly, not to get sappy, but say thank you for having me on the podcast. Thank you, Cynthia, for, you know, accepting me and getting to work with people that I watched on TV previously. It's just a dream come true. So thank you guys so much.
Dude, appreciate it. And look
hurry back. You know, don't be a stranger. Hurry back.
Exactly. I don't plan on being one.
And hopefully have you back full-time in a few months too as well. So in the meantime, for us, that is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, if everything tastes like chicken, what does chicken taste like? Be safe, take care of yourselves, wear a mask, and we will see you next week.